energy, or quiet, subdued calm. Take notice of how people are arranging themselves, alone or in groups. Are they talking and moving their hands? Are some more animated than others? What is your gut telling you about them? Another way to read the mood of the room is to bring along a more experienced guide, much like you would on an African safari. Your guide should be a socially aware expert, willing to show you the ropes when it comes to tapping into your instincts and picking up the room's mood. Shadow your guide and listen to what he feels and sees. Ask what he senses and what clues gave the mood away. Eventually, you should be the one to take the lead. Size up the room and share and compare your thoughts with your guide. Through this exercise, you will soon pick up on observations like your guide does, in time doing so on your own. Human nature and behavior may not be that far from what happens on the open African savanna. The sooner you can hone your ability to spot safety, concern, or shifts in moods and group settings, the more skilled you will be in maneuvering through the social wilds of your life. Chapter 8. Relationship Management Strategies. Most people have a spring in their step and put their best foot forward when they're in a new relationship, work or otherwise. But they stumble and lose their footing trying to maintain relationships over the long term. Reality soon sets in that the honeymoon phase is officially over. The truth is, all relationships take work, even the great ones that seem effortless. We've all heard this, but do we really get it? Working on a relationship takes time, effort, and know-how. The know-how is emotional intelligence. If you want a relationship that has staying power and grows over time, and in which your needs and the other person's needs are satisfied, the final EQ skill, relationship management, is just what the doctor ordered. Thankfully, these relationship management skills can be learned, and they tap into the three other EQ skills that you're familiar with: self-awareness, self-management, and social awareness. You use your self-awareness skills to notice your feelings and judge if your needs are being satisfied. You use your self-management skills to express your feelings and act accordingly to benefit the connection. Finally, you use your social awareness skills to better understand the other person's needs and feelings. In the end, no man is an island. Relationships are an essential and fulfilling part of life. Since you are half of any relationship, you have half of the responsibility of deepening these connections. The following 17 strategies will help you work on what's critical to making relationships work. Relationship Management Strategies. 1. Be open and be curious. 2. Enhance your natural communication style. 3. Avoid giving mixed signals. 4. Remember the little things that pack a punch. 5. Take feedback well. 6. Build trust. 7. Have an open door policy. 8. Only get mad on purpose. 9. Don't avoid the inevitable. 10. Acknowledge the other person's feelings. 11. Compliment the person's emotions or situation. 12. When you care, show it. 13. Explain your decisions. Don't just make them. 14. Make your feedback direct and constructive. 15. Align your intention with your impact. 16. Offer a fix-it statement during a broken conversation. 17. Tackle a tough conversation. Relationship Management Strategy Number 1. Be open and be curious. We can imagine a few listeners thinking, "Oh, brother, I have to be open and curious with people at work? Can I just work on my projects and what I was hired to do, minus the touchy-feely stuff?" Actually, Establishing, building, and maintaining relationships are all part of your job, even if you work with just one other person. Maintaining relationships may not be on your job description and may not have even been discussed. But for you to be successful, being open and curious is absolutely, unequivocally part of your job. Let's explore what open means in terms of relationship management. Being open means sharing information about yourself with others. You can use your self-management skills to choose how open you are and what you share, but know that there's a benefit to opening up that may help you with your choices. When people know about you, there's less room for them to misinterpret you. For example, if you're particularly sensitive about showing up 5 minutes early to meetings and get annoyed when people stroll in at the very beginning of the meeting or even a little late, some people might interpret you as being uptight and rigid. If you shared with these same people that you were in the Marines for the first years of your career, your coworkers would understand and maybe even appreciate your sense of timing and courtesy. Who knows? Your punctuality might even rub off. Being an open book on your end isn't the whole story with managing a relationship. You also need to be interested in the other person's story as well. In other words, you need to be curious. The more you show interest in and learn about the other person, the better shot you have at meeting his or her needs and not misinterpreting them. When you ask questions, draw from your social awareness skills to choose an appropriate setting and time. Be inquisitive in your tone, similar to how Santa Claus asks a child what he'd like for Christmas. The opposite tone is judgmental. Think of someone who's ever asked you a question like, "Why on earth did you buy a motorcycle?" Or, "You majored in philosophy, what did you plan to do with that?" When you ask questions and this person opens up, you will not only learn information that will help you manage the relationship, but the other person will also appreciate the interest shown in him or her. If you're beginning a new relationship, in an established one, or even if you're in a rough patch, take a few minutes out of your day to identify a few relationships that need some attention, and make time to be open and curious with these people. Relationship management strategy number 2. Enhance your natural communication style. Whether it's putting your 2 cents in when others are talking to you, or shying away from a disagreement, your natural communication style shapes your relationships. Now you have the opportunity to use your self-awareness, self-management, and social awareness skills to shape your natural style. At the top of a page in a journal, describe what your natural style is. You can call it whatever you would like. Think about how your friends, family, and colleagues experience your style. Is it direct, indirect, comfortable, serious, entertaining, discreet, controlled, chatty, intense, curious, cool, intrusive? You name it because you've likely heard about it more than once. On the left side of the paper, jot down the upsides of your natural style. These are the things people appreciate about how you interact with them. On the right side, list the downsides or things that have created confusion, weird reactions, or trouble. Once your list is complete, choose 3 upsides that you can use more to improve your communication. Next, choose 3 downsides and think about ways you can either eliminate, downplay, or improve them. Be honest with yourself about what you will or won't do. If you need help figuring out what will give you the biggest results, just ask your friends, co-workers, and family for their suggestions. Making your plan public will also build in accountability that can help you make a lasting improvement in your relationships. Relationship management strategy number 3. Avoid giving mixed signals. We all rely on stoplights to safely direct us through intersections dozens of times each week. When the stoplights aren't working and the lights either blink to proceed with caution or are out altogether, the intersection transforms into an every-man-for-himself situation. People are confused, and when it's their turn to cross, they gingerly look all ways before moving ahead. With functioning stoplights, we have confidence in the system because it's clear what we do. Stop on red and go on green. It's the same for signals that we send to the people in our relationships. Feelings express truth, and they have a way of rising to the surface through our reactions and body language, despite the words we choose. Telling your staff in a muted voice and frowning face that they did a great job on the product launch doesn't match up. The words and the body language are mixed. People trust what they see over what they hear. Even if you're a good self-manager, your emotions rise to the surface. You experience many emotions every day, and your brain can't sort through every single one. When you talk with someone, you may be saying one thing that's on your mind as your body reacts to an emotion you experienced minutes ago. You confuse and frustrate others when you say one thing and your body or tone say another. Over time, this confusion will cause communication issues that will affect your relationships. To resolve the mixed signal issue, use your self-awareness skills to identify your emotions, and use your self-management skills to decide which feelings to express and how to express them. Sometimes it might not be appropriate to match your signals. Let's say you become angry in a meeting and can't really show your emotion at that moment. Just put your anger on the back burner for the moment, but don't disregard the feeling forever. Choose a time when you can express your anger when it doesn't work against you, but instead produces the most positive results. If your emotion is strong enough and you can't put off expressing it, your best bet is to explain what's happening. That is, if I seem distracted, it's because I can't stop worrying about a phone call that went awry this morning. For the next month, pay close attention to matching your tone and body language to what you are really trying to say. Take mental note of those moments when you tell someone that you're feeling fine, but your body, tone, or demeanor is sending drastically different signals. When you catch yourself sending a mixed signal, readjust to match it or explain it. Relationship management strategy number 4. Remember the little things that pack a punch. It's pretty obvious on any news channel, reality show, sitcom, or newspaper that today's media feed off the idea that courtesy appears to be diminishing in modern society. With the decline of good manners, there are fewer expressions of appreciation. These days, in both personal and work-related relationships, there are far too few pleases, thank yous, and I'm sorries being expressed. Most workers will say that they never get thanked for their contributions at work, but yet will agree that hearing thank you, please, or even I'm sorry can have a positive impact on morale. Think about how often you really say thank you, please, or I'm sorry when it is needed. If you don't use them often, it could be due to lack of time or habit, or maybe even a bruised ego. Begin to make a habit of incorporating more of these phrases into your relationships. Or, rather, please make it a habit to use more of these phrases during your day. Thank you. Relationship management strategy number 5. Take feedback well. Feedback is a unique gift. It's meant to help us improve in ways that we perhaps cannot see on our own. Since you never know exactly what you're going to receive, however, feedback is sometimes like opening up a present and looking inside to find a pair of tiger-striped socks with red sequins. The element of surprise can catch us off guard, so we need to use our self-awareness skills to prepare ourselves for that moment. What do I feel when I'm on the spot and surprised? How do I show it? With that awareness, move on to your self-management skills. What response should I choose? To help you receive feedback well, let's break it down. First, consider the source of your feedback. This person probably has a relevant perspective. He or she knows you and has seen your performance and has an interest in seeing you improve. As you receive feedback, turn on your social awareness skills to listen and really hear what is being said. Ask clarifying questions and ask for examples to better understand the person's perspective. Whether you agree with what was said or not, thank the person for his or her willingness to share because it takes almost as much grace to give feedback as it does to receive it. After you receive the feedback, Use your self-management skills to decide your next steps. Don't feel pressured to rush into action. Time can help you absorb the underlying point, sort out your feelings and thoughts, and help you to decide what to do about the feedback. Remember the emotion versus reason list? Receiving feedback is probably the hardest part of the process. Once you decide what to do with the feedback, follow up with plans. Actually making adjustments will show the person who gave you feedback that you value his or her comments. Take the person's feedback seriously and try what he or she suggested. There may be no better way to solidify your relationship with him or her. Relationship management strategy number 6. Build trust. Have you ever been asked to practice trust? The exercise looks like this. You have a partner and you stand about 5 feet in front of the person with your back facing him. You close your eyes and on a count of 3 you fall backward toward the person so that he can catch you. When you're caught, everyone enjoys a laugh and is thankful neither person wiped out. If only trust were a matter of good, strong arms and steady balance. An unknown author said, "Trust is a peculiar resource. It is built rather than depleted by use." Trust is something that takes time to build, can be lost in seconds, and may be our most important and most difficult objective in managing our relationships. How is trust built? Open communication, willingness to share, consistency in words, action, and behavior over time, and reliability in following through on the agreements of the relationship, just to name a few examples. It's ironic that, for most relationships, a certain level of trust needs to be present in order for you to develop trust. To build trust, use your self-awareness and self-management skills to be the first to lay some of yourself on the line and share something about you. Remember, you should share parts of yourself at a time. Don't feel like you have to be a complete open book up front. To manage your relationships, you need to manage your trust of others, and their trust level of you is critical to deepening your connection with others. Cultivating relationships and building trust take time. Identify the relationships in your life that need more trust, and use your self-awareness skills to ask yourself what is missing. Use your social awareness skills to ask the other person what needs to happen to build trust and listen to the answer. Asking will show you care about the relationship, which will help to build trust and deepen the relationship. Relationship management strategy number 7. Have an open door policy. Here's a quick history lesson that you may remember. The open door policy originated in 1899 when the United States feared it would lose its trading privileges in the East. The United States declared an open door policy allowing all trading nations access to the Chinese market. Access. It's an important word that sums up the open door concept. Access has moved swiftly beyond trading agreements and into the workplace. Today, a true open door policy allows any employee to talk to anyone at any level, fostering upward communication through direct and easy access to everyone below. Ask those around you if you should adopt an open door policy to better manage your relationships. If you need to be more accessible and show people they can have unscheduled, informal conversations with you, then adopting this policy might be right up your alley. Keep in mind you don't have to stretch yourself too thin by being there for everyone at any time. You simply have to communicate your policy and then stick to it. Use your self-awareness skills to identify how the policy works for you and manage yourself to make it work. Ongoing observations of others, also known as social awareness, should help you determine how it's working, too. Remember, increasing your accessibility can only improve your relationships. It literally opens the door to communication, even if it's virtual, by email or phone. People will feel valued and respected because of the time you're giving them, and you get the opportunity to learn about others. At the end of the day, the policy is a win for you and a win for others. Relationship management strategy number 8. Only get mad on purpose. Anyone can become angry. That is easy. But to be angry with the right person, to the right degree, at the right time, for the right purpose, and in the right way, this is not easy. We can thank Greek philosopher Aristotle for those words and enduring insight into managing our emotions and relationships. If you can master this one, consider your EQ journey a success. Anger is an emotion that exists for a reason. Anger is not an emotion to stifle or ignore. If you manage it properly and use it purposefully, you can get results that enhance your relationships. Really. Think of the football coach who gets straight to the point at halftime. His stern feedback grabs his players' attention and focuses them for the second half. The team returns refreshed, refocused, and ready to win. In this case, the coach managed his emotions to motivate others to action. Expressing anger in appropriate ways communicates your strong feelings and reminds people of the gravity of a situation. Expressing anger too much, or at the wrong times, desensitizes people to what you are feeling, making it hard for others to take you seriously. Using a strong emotion like anger to benefit your relationships will take time to master, because hopefully you don't have daily opportunities to practice. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes preparation for this strategy, starting with becoming aware of your anger. Use your self-awareness skills to think about and define your varying degrees of anger, from what annoys you a little to what sends you off the deep end. Write these down and choose words that are specific, and then write examples to explain when you feel this way. Determine when you should show your anger based on the criterion that if it's shared, it will actually improve the relationship somehow. To make your choices, use your social awareness skills to think about the other people involved and their responses. Remember, relationship management is about making choices and acting with the goal of creating an honest, deep connection with others. To do this, you need to be honest with others and with yourself, which sometimes means using anger with a purpose. Relationship management strategy number 9. Don't avoid the inevitable. You and Marge work in the same shipping and receiving department. She gets under your skin. If you could press a button to ship her to another department, it would have been done 5 years ago. The problem is, no such button exists, and there's no chance of change. To add fuel to the fire, your boss has just given you and Marge a large project to work on together. She suggests meeting for lunch to talk about the next steps, and you generate a fast list of reasons why you can't make it. You have officially brushed Marge off. Now what? You're still at square one, that's what, and you still have the project and have to figure out how to work together. This is when relationship management skills are absolutely necessary, because though you might not choose a friendship with this person, you and Marge are now responsible for the same project. Here's a basic strategy to work with Marge. Do not avoid her or the situation. Accept it and make the choice to use your EQ skills to move forward with her. You'll need to watch your emotions and make decisions about how to manage those emotions. Since you're not in this alone, conjure up your social awareness skills to bring Marge into the fold and put yourself in her shoes. Meet with her to learn about what experience she has to offer and her preferences for working with you on this project. Observe her body language to see how she responds to you. Maybe you frustrate her just as much. This may hurt a little, but you may actually lay the groundwork for a working relationship. Next, share your preferences for managing the project and come to an agreement. You won't need to tell Marge you don't care for her. Instead, you can share that you'd prefer to work independently on separate parts of the project and meet along the way to ensure you're both on track. If Marge agrees, your work process has been hammered out. If she doesn't agree, it's time to apply more self-management and social awareness skills until you reach an agreement. If you get frustrated along the way, and chances are you will, Ask yourself why and decide how to manage yourself. Loop back with Marge at your next meeting and remind yourselves about the goal of the project. At the end of the project, find a way to acknowledge what you both accomplished together. Relationship management strategy number 10. Acknowledge the other person's feelings. If you're known for being terrible with relationships, then this EQ strategy may be a great place to start getting better. Let's say that one morning you're pulling into your company's parking lot and you see your coworker, Jessie, holding back tears as she exits her car next to you. You ask her if she's okay, and she's not. You respond with, "Well, work will get it off your mind. See you inside." Then you wonder why she avoids you for the rest of the day. One key to managing relationships is leaning into your own discomfort and taking a moment to acknowledge, not stifle or change, other people's feelings. "I'm sorry you're upset. What can I do?" shows Jessie that if crying is what's going to help her, then you'd be willing to find her a tissue. Simple acts like this one acknowledge emotions without making them a big deal, marginalizing them, or dismissing them. Everyone has a right to experience feelings, even if you might not feel the same way. You don't have to agree with the way people are feeling, but you do have to recognize those feelings as legitimate and respect them. To help you validate someone's feelings, let's use Jessie's example. Using your social awareness skills, listen to her intently, and summarize what you've heard back to her. Not only does it show great listening skills, but it also shows that you're adept at relationship management because you reached out to show you cared and took an interest in her. You'll end up with a better connection with a now calm Jessie, and all it took was some time to pay attention and notice her feelings. Relationship management strategy number 11. Compliment the person's emotions or situation. If you calmly phone your utility company to have an incorrect fee removed from your monthly bill, you would assume that the customer service representative would be helpful, friendly, and courteous with your request. Let's say you make the same phone call, but this time you're in a terrible mood. You're feeling testy, agitated, and annoyed at the error. You've been on hold for 10 minutes, which doesn't help. When the customer service rep talks to you, he can hear it in your voice. When he speaks, he sounds serious, as if he wants to resolve this quickly. You appreciate the professionalism in service, check this problem off your list, and move on. This customer service rep is skilled at picking up on cues and adapting to them to give fast, hassle-free service, which benefits the customer and the company as well. And his high EQ makes him promotable and marketable. What he did exactly is a strategy in relationship management that requires social awareness skills, listening, being present, putting yourself in the shoes of the other person, identifying where someone is emotionally, and choosing an appropriate and complimentary response. This last piece, choosing a complimentary response, doesn't require you to match or mirror emotions. It wouldn't make sense for the customer service rep to use the same impatient approach you did. That would infuriate you as the customer. Mirroring emotions would also make coworkers and friends recoil. The complimentary response always says you recognize what the other person feels and you think it's important. To practice complimenting emotions in your relationships, think about one or two emotional situations you've experienced where there wasn't a lot of gray area and there was at least one other person present. How did the other person respond to you? Did his or her response help or hurt your mood? Was the person able to compliment your emotional state? Once you can answer these questions, it's your turn to focus on complimenting other people's emotions in the situations they face. Give yourself a week or two to be at the ready for the people in your closest relationships, the people at work or home. Tell yourself your role is to notice their moods and to be there for your coworkers and family members in a helpful way. Whether you're excited or concerned for them, you will show that you are sensitive and care about what they are going through. Relationship management strategy number 12. When you care, show it. Here's a true story for aspiring high EQ managers across the globe. One morning, I groggily went up in the elevator of my office building to start yet another day. It had been a long night the day before. I'd stayed late so I could finish some projects for my boss. When I got to my cubicle, I saw that there was a fresh black and white cookie and a card that said, "Thanks for filling in the black and whites." It was from my boss. She was always such a busy person, juggling home and work. I was floored to see that she had found a few minutes to slip into a bakery on behalf of my sweet tooth and get into the office early to put a cookie on my chair. I just about cried at her thoughtfulness. Talk about the simple things that go a long way. That cookie motivated me to work even harder, and I did so happily and with fierce loyalty. We hear this story in many forms, but the strategy is always the same. There are people who do great work around you every day. When you care, show it. Don't hesitate or put it off until next week. Do something this week or even today. Things as simple as a greeting card or something else inexpensive yet meaningful that sums up how you feel are all you need to make an impact and strengthen a relationship. Relationship Management Strategy Number 13. Explain your decisions, don't just make them. It's frightening to be in a place you're not familiar with and be completely in the dark. Case in point. Have you ever planned to go camping but got to the site in the dark? It's hard to get your bearings. You're setting up a tent in the dark, and because you're in the wilderness, it's just eerily quiet and black. You go to bed with one eye open and hope for the best. The next day, you wake up tired and unzip your tent, and you're amazed at the beauty around you. Water, mountains, tree-lined trails, and cute little animals abound. There's nothing to be afraid of. You soon forget last night's anxieties, and you move about your day. What were you so worried about anyway? The only difference between these two scenarios is light. It's the same place, and you're with the same people with the same gear. This is what people experience when decisions are made for them. When you're in the dark, intentionally or not, about upcoming layoffs, contract negotiations, and the like, you may as well be setting up camp in blackness. If there are layoffs that increase your workload or change your shift, you'll find out when the pink slips are handed out. If taxes are changed, you'll see it on your paycheck. No recourse, no trial period. It's a done deal. That's a tough pill to swallow because we're not children or dependents. We're adults. To support an idea, we need to understand why the decision was made. When you use your EQ to manage relationships, keep this in mind. Instead of making a change and expecting others to just accept it, take time to explain the why behind the decision, including alternatives, and why the final choice made the most sense. If you can ask for ideas and input ahead of time, it's even better. Finally, acknowledge how the decision will affect everyone. People appreciate this transparency and openness, even though the decision may negatively impact them. Transparency and openness also make people feel like they are trusted, respected, and connected to their organization instead of being told what to do and kept in the dark. If you have a habit of making decisions quickly and independently, you're likely very personally competent. Though old habits die hard, since they're ingrained in your brain's wiring, it's time to rewire and add social competence to your decision-making repertoire. First, you'll likely have to spot your upcoming decisions. Take out your calendar to look over the next 3 months to identify which decisions will need to be made by then. Now work backward and see who will be impacted by these decisions. Make a complete list of who will be affected by each decision and plan on when and where you will talk together about each, including the details that explain why and how each decision will be made. If you have to invite people to a special meeting for just this purpose, so be it. As you plan your agenda and your words, use your social awareness skills to put yourself in the shoes of others so you can speak to your audience before and after you make the decision as they would expect and hope. Relationship Management Strategy Number 14. Make your feedback direct and constructive. Think about the best feedback you ever received. It wasn't something you necessarily wanted or expected, but it made a difference in your behavior going forward. The feedback may have shaped your overall performance or how you deal with a particular situation or even your career. What made the feedback so good? If you're responsible for giving feedback, there are several guidebooks to walk you through the process, making sure it's within legal and human resources guidelines. Sit down. We have some news. Following legal guidelines isn't what makes feedback a performance or person-changing experience. Infusing EQ know-how into your feedback, though, is what does. Here's how to think about feedback and EQ. Giving feedback is a relationship-building event that requires all four EQ skills to be effective. Use your self-awareness skills to identify your feelings about the feedback. Are you comfortable with the process? Why or why not? Next, use your self-management skills to decide what you'll do with the information you just learned about yourself from answering the above questions. For example, if you're anxious about giving feedback about phone etiquette because you don't want people to think you're eavesdropping, how exactly are you going to get beyond this anxiety to confidently give feedback? It's up to you, but don't ignore the feedback because of your discomfort. Next, use your social awareness skills to think of the person who's receiving the feedback. Remember, feedback is meant to address the problem, not the person. How does the person need to hear your message so it's clear, direct, constructive, and respectful? Constructive feedback has two parts, sharing your opinion and offering solutions for change. Let's take Todd. He's very direct. Sugarcoating his need to make phone etiquette improvements will insult him. But if sugarcoating hard news is in his improvement plan, consider sharing feedback with and without the sugar so he can hear the difference and learn from it. Jenny, on the other hand, is sensitive. Since this is a relationship-building experience, keep Jenny in mind when planning her feedback. Using softeners such as I think or I believe or this time to begin a statement may soften the blow. Instead of, your report is terrible, use, I believe there are parts of your report that could use revisions. May I walk you through some suggestions? Here, offering suggestions for improvement is helpful, not prescriptive. At the end, ask the person for his or her thoughts and thank the person for his or her willingness to consider your suggestions. Relationship management strategy number 15. Align your intention with your impact. Let's say you're in a staff meeting, and the next topic on the agenda is to figure out why some key deadlines are being missed. After some back and forth, it's looking like Anna might be partially to blame, and the room is getting tense. In an honest attempt to lighten the mood, you say something like, "Geez, Anna, looks like maybe taking those longer lunches is finally catching up to you." Instead of laughs, there's dead silence. You don't understand what you did wrong, and you later tell Anna, "I was only kidding," but she seems put off. These are the famous last words of someone who had good intentions, but the result or impact was not aligned, and it's too late. Or think about the results-driven manager who has good intentions about guiding her staff toward achieving higher goals. She's so focused on success that she becomes entrenched in the work, doing most of it herself, or pushing everyone to do it her way, completely missing how to manage the work through others. Her staff deems her a hard-driving micromanager who doesn't share knowledge, and all she intended was for the team to learn from her and be successful. Yet again, intentions were good, but they had the opposite impact. Relationships are now tarnished, and the manager can't figure out why her staff resents her. If you find that you spend time smoothing things over to repair a relationship, or you're unsure about what's going wrong in your relationships, know that these situations are avoidable. With the help of your awareness and management skills, making small adjustments will make all the difference. To align your words and actions with your intent, you need to use your social awareness and self-management skills to observe the situation and the people in it. Think before you speak or act, and make an appropriate and sensitive response. Do a quick analysis. Think of a situation where the impact of what you said or did was not what you intended. On a piece of paper, describe the incident, your intentions, your actions and the impact, the end result or reaction of others. Next, write what you didn't realize in the situation and fill in what you understand now in hindsight, including missed cues, what you learned about yourself and others. Finally, answer what you could have done differently to keep your intent and impact aligned. If you're not sure, ask someone who was involved in the situation. In Anna's case, you didn't realize it was the wrong moment for that joke. It singled her out publicly. Next time, you'll lighten the mood by poking fun at yourself, not someone else. The results-driven manager didn't realize what motivated her staff members. She didn't give them space and time to learn and grow on their own. To better manage your relationships, it's critical to spot misalignments before you act so that your actions match your impact with your good intentions. Relationship management strategy number 16. Offer a fix-it statement during a broken conversation. Airline agents. They are often the bearer of unavoidably bad news in person. Weather delays, delays due to mechanical repairs, lost luggage, overbooking, the list goes on and on. Airline agents attempt to repair your broken experience with fix-its or tools, like rebooking and vouchers, to problem-solve and address the ultimate goal to get you to your destination. It's probably safe to assume that we've all had conversations where we could use a fix-it. A simple discussion breaks into a disagreement or gets stuck going around in circles. In these broken conversations, past mistakes may get brought to the surface, regretful comments are made, and blame is present. No matter who said what or who started it, it's time to refocus and fix it. Someone needs to step back, quickly assess the situation, and begin repairing the conversation with a fix-it. To do this, you need to let go of blame and focus on the repair. Do you want to be right, or do you want a resolution? Use your self-awareness skills to see what you are contributing to the situation. Self-manage to put your tendencies aside and choose the high road. Your social awareness skills can help you identify what the other person brought to the table or feels. Looking at both sides will help you figure out where the interaction broke down and which fix-it statement is needed to begin the repairs. Fix-it statements feel like a breath of fresh air, are neutral in tone, and find common ground. A fix-it statement can be as simple as saying, "This is hard," or asking how the person is feeling. Most conversations can benefit from a fix-it, and it won't do any harm if you feel the conversation breaking down. This strategy will help you maintain open lines of communication when you're upset, and with conscious effort and practice, you'll be able to fix your broken conversations before they become damaged beyond repair. Relationship management strategy number 17. Tackle a tough conversation. "Why did I get passed over for the promotion?" your staff member Judith asks, with a slightly defensive tone, a wounded posture, and a quivering voice. This is going to be a tough one. The news leaked out early about Roger's promotion before you could speak with Judith. You value Judith and her work, but you'll need to explain that she's not ready for the next level yet. That's not the hardest part of this conversation. Damage control is another story. From the boardroom to the break room, tough conversations will surface, and it's possible to calmly and effectively handle them. Tough conversations are inevitable. Forget running from them because they're sure to catch up to you. Though EQ skills can't make these conversations disappear, acquiring some new skills can make these conversations a lot easier to navigate without ruining the relationship. 1. Start with agreement. If you know you're likely to end up in a disagreement, start your discussion with the common ground you share. Whether it's simply agreeing that the discussion will be hard but important, or agreeing on a shared goal, create a feeling of agreement. For example, "Judith, I first want you to know that I value you, and I'm sorry that you learned the news from someone other than me. I'd like to use this time to explain the situation, and anything else you'd like to hear from me, I'd also like to hear from you." 2. Ask the person to help you understand his or her side. People want to be heard. If they don't feel heard, frustration rises. Before frustration enters the picture, beat it to the punch, and ask the person to share his or her point of view. Manage your own feelings as needed, but focus on understanding the other person's view. In Judith's case, this would sound like, "Judith, along the way, I want to make sure you feel comfortable sharing what's on your mind with me. I'd like to make sure I understand your perspective." By asking for Judith's input, you're showing that you care and have an interest in learning more about her. This is an opportunity to deepen and manage your relationship with Judith. 3. Resist the urge to plan a comeback or a rebuttal. Your brain cannot listen well and prepare to speak at the same time. Use your self-management skills to silence your inner voice and direct your attention to the person in front of you. In this case, Judith has been passed up for a promotion that she was really interested in and found out about it through the grapevine. Let's face it, if you'd like to maintain the relationship, you need to be quiet, listen to her shock and disappointment, and resist the urge to defend yourself. 4. Help the other person understand your side, too. Now it is your turn to help the other person understand your perspective. Describe your discomfort, your thoughts, your ideas, and the reasons behind your thought process. Communicate clearly and simply. Don't speak in circles or in code. In Judith's case, what you say can ultimately be great feedback for her, which she deserves. To explain that Roger had more experience and was more suited for the job at this time is an appropriate message. Since his promotion was leaked to her in an unsavory way, this is something that requires an apology. This ability to explain your thoughts and directly address others in a compassionate way during a difficult situation is a key aspect of relationship management. 5. Move the conversation forward. Once you understand each other's perspective, even if there's disagreement, someone has to move things along. In the case of Judith, it's you. Try to find some common ground again. When you're talking to Judith, say something like, "Well, I'm so glad you came to me directly and that we had the opportunity to talk about it. I understand your position, and it sounds like you understand mine. I'm still invested in your development and would like to work with you on getting the experience you need. What are your thoughts?" 6. Keep in touch. The resolution to a tough conversation needs more attention even after you leave it. So check progress frequently, ask the other person if he or she is satisfied, and keep in touch as you move forward. You are half of what it takes to keep a relationship oiled and running smoothly. In regard to Judith, meeting with her regularly to talk about her career advancement and promotion potential would continue to show her that you care about her progress. In the end, when you enter a tough conversation, prepare yourself to take the high road, not be defensive, and remain open by practicing the strategies above. Instead of losing ground with someone in a conversation like this, it can actually become a moment that solidifies your relationship going forward. Epilogue. Just the facts. A look at the latest discoveries in emotional intelligence. When TalentSmart, registered trademark, released the emotional intelligence appraisal, EQ was still taking root in the minds of business leaders, other professionals, and anyone who simply wanted to lead a happier and healthier life. By measuring their EQ and showing them how to improve in one swoop, the emotional intelligence appraisal quickly became the vehicle that enabled people to turn their newfound emotional mastery into strengthened relationships, better decisions, stronger leadership, and ultimately more successful organizations. At TalentSmart, we've watched hundreds of thousands of people from the top to the bottom of organizations take the journey to higher EQ. The field of EQ skill development has truly blossomed since then, and we've taken special interest in tracking the changing landscape all along the way. What we found in our studies has sometimes startled and often encouraged us. What remains constant throughout our discoveries is the vitally important role EQ skills play in the quest to lead a happy, healthy, and productive personal and professional life. More specifically, our research sheds new light on the battle of the sexes, the generational divide, the quest for career advancement and higher-paying jobs, as well as cluing us in on which countries are primed for future success in an increasingly global economy. All offer hope for those looking to increase their EQ skills. Here's what we found. The poles are melting, EQ then and now. At the end of 2008, we took a good look at how the collective EQ of the U.S. population had changed since 2003. While we weren't surprised to see those we tested and taught improve their EQ, we were intrigued to watch the EQ scores of newbies increase with each passing year. And the increase continued, year after year after year. The EQ scores of those we'd never tested or taught made a slow and steady climb from 75 to 79. We discovered a substantial increase in the emotional intelligence of the U.S. workforce between 2003 and 2007. Skeptics might be tempted to think, what's the big deal? That's just a 4-point increase in 5 years. But think of the impact a seemingly small temperature increase, say 1 or 2 degrees, has upon our ecosystem. The same is true with human behavior in the workplace, where the frozen poles of low emotional intelligence are starting to melt. Once we take a closer look at the specific changes the broad gains in EQ have created, the real power of the transformation comes to light. In the last 5 years, we've seen the percentage of people who are highly attuned to their own emotions and to the emotions of other people rise from 13.7% to 18.3%. During that same period, the percentage of people with a poor understanding of how anxiety, frustration, and anger influence their behavior has dropped from 31% to 14%. When you apply these proportions to the 180 million people in America's workforce, it means that 9 million more people today than in 2003 almost always keep their cool during heated conflicts. 9 million more people actually show that they care about their coworkers and customers when they suffer hard times. And 25 million fewer people are painfully oblivious to the impact their behavior has on others. What makes this discovery so special is that prior to taking the test, very few, if any, of the people in our sample had ever received formal emotional intelligence training. Yet their average EQ score steadily increased from year to year. It's as if the people who intentionally practice emotionally intelligent behaviors are infecting others who may have never even heard of the concept. Emotional intelligence skills, much like emotions themselves, are contagious. That means that our EQ skills are highly dependent on the surrounding people and circumstances. The more we interact with empathetic people, the more empathetic we become. The more time we spend with other people who openly discuss emotions, the more skilled we become at identifying and understanding emotions. That is precisely what makes emotional intelligence a learned skill, rather than some unalterable trait bestowed only upon a lucky few at birth. But that's where the good times end. In 2008, for the first time since we began tracking it, collective emotional intelligence dropped, underscoring just how susceptible to change these skills truly are. Federal economists pinpointed December 2007 as the start of the United States' worst economy in 70 years, which means that 2008 did not see a single day without recession. The relapse in emotional intelligence skills between 2007 and 2008 is the product of economic woes. Hard times of any kind, financial, familial, or job-related, create more intense and often prolonged negative emotions that ultimately result in stress. In addition to the physical costs of stress, such as weight gain and heart disease, stress also taxes our mental resources. Under stress-free conditions, we can consciously devote extra effort to staying calm and collected during the trials and tribulations of everyday life. We are more confident in our abilities to handle unexpected events, and we allow our minds to overcome troublesome matters. Unmanaged stress, however, consumes much of those mental resources. It reduces our minds to something like a state of martial law, in which emotions single-handedly dictate behavior, while our rational capacities are busy trying to turn lemons into lemonade. Suddenly, a little setback in your project at work that would have been no big deal in relatively prosperous times feels more like a catastrophe than a minor nuisance. For many people, their EQ skills desert them at precisely the time when they need these skills the most, under stress. Only those with well-trained and almost second-nature EQ skills can effectively weather the storm. This stress seems to be having a significant impact on our collective emotional intelligence. We went from 18.3% of people being highly skilled in emotional intelligence in 2007 to only 16.7% in 2008. In other words, we lost 2.8 million highly skilled soldiers in the battle for a more emotionally intelligent society. That is 2.8 million people who could have been guideposts showing others the way to more emotionally intelligent behaviors, but are instead struggling to keep their own skills sharp. The battle of the sexes, EQ and gender. Sheila began her career as a financial consultant specializing in healthcare at a multinational consulting firm. It only took a few years of dazzling clients and garnering rave reviews from upper management before she was eventually snatched up by her current employer, a large regional healthcare system in the Midwest. Still in her early 30s, Sheila is already an assistant vice president on the fast track to a C-level appointment. Her past and current superiors unanimously agree that Sheila is smart. Yet there's something else, something they can't quite put a finger on. Early in Sheila's consulting career, after watching her diffuse tense situations with clients time and again, her former manager summed up the secret to Sheila's success. She just gets people. In 2003, we found some stark contrast between the EQ skills expressed by men and those found in women like Sheila. Women outperformed men in self-management, social awareness, and relationship management. In fact, self-awareness was the only EQ skill in which men were able to keep pace with women. But times have changed, and so have men. Men and women are still neck and neck in their ability to recognize their own emotions, just as in 2003. But men have caught up in their ability to manage their own emotions. Chalk this change up to nothing more than shifting social norms. This evolution of cultural mores benefits men. Men are now encouraged to pay their emotions some extra thought, which goes a long way toward clearer thinking. Not surprisingly, we found that a full 70% of male leaders who rank in the top 15% in decision-making skills also score the highest in emotional intelligence skills. In contrast, not one single male leader with low EQ was among the most skilled decision-makers. Although this seems counterintuitive, it turns out that paying attention to your emotions is the most logical way to make good decisions. So instead of feeling like time spent addressing angst or frustration is somehow a sign of weakness, men are now free to get a stronger handle on their emotions in the name of sound judgment. It's lonely at the top. Considering the mountains of literature about EQ, you'd think corporate executives would be pretty smart about it. As we revealed in our Harvard Business Review article, Heartless Bosses, our research shows that the message still isn't getting through. We have measured EQ in 500,000 senior executives, including 1,000 CEOs, managers, and line employees across industries on 6 continents. Scores climb with titles from the bottom of the corporate ladder upward toward middle management. Middle managers stand out with the highest EQ scores in the workforce. But up beyond middle management, there is a steep downward trend in EQ scores. For the titles of director and above, scores descend faster than a snowboarder on a black diamond. CEOs, on average, have the lowest EQ scores in the workplace. A leader's primary function is to get work done through people. You might think, then, that the higher the position, the better the people skills. It appears the opposite is true. Too many leaders are promoted because of what they know or how long they have worked, rather than for their skill in managing others. Once they reach the top, they actually spend less time interacting with staff. Yet among executives, those with the highest EQ scores are the best performers. We've found that EQ skills are more important to job performance than any other leadership skill. The same holds true for every job title. Those with the highest EQ scores within any position outperform their peers. The generational divide, EQ and age. The mass exodus of baby boomers from the workplace has already begun. According to the U.S. Office of Personnel Management, Between 2006 and 2010, boomer retirement will have robbed American companies of nearly 290,000 full-time experienced employees. Silver hair, pension funds, and personal memories of the Kennedy assassinations are not